This is
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Celebrity guest.
Celebrity guest.
Welcome to another edition of Wow, What a Week. Up close and personal. He said that he is a natural-born actor. Art chose him, and he embraced it. As a nation, we are quite glad he did, since we have enjoyed his range of work. He's been an important and notable thread in the tapestry of arts and performances in South Africa. You can tell I didn't write this. As well as being a noble example to men on how to rock grey facial hair. Please join me in giving a wild welcome to Master Sifu Sillo Make Kancube.
What an intro.
Welcome, Master. Do you ever look in the mirror and just feel good about yourself, or yeah, no? Get blind. No, the reason
but you have those moments, you know.
The reason I'm asking that is just the other day you posted on social media that you are still a work in progress.
Yeah. No, I am. I'm a work in progress, you know. You know, that there are people who have arrived.
Yes.
we are a work in progress.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, the other day.
Yeah. And I think, the other day.
Yes, sir.
I was up at Advertia Black Cat. Peanut butter.
That was one of the ads I memorized as a child.
Yeah.
Black Cat peanut butter.
Yeah.
To survive in the concrete jungle, you need protein power. That's why I eat Black Cat peanut butter, because you never know when you're going to need it next. Hey, fool, get out the way. See what I mean? Bean bath. Boom. What was that? Black belt, huh? Black cat.
I don't know. But you know, it is just amazing how certain things can just grab you.
Absolutely.
You know, and that was the power of that thing.
What from popular culture in your childhood do you carry with you all the time? Whether mentally, whether as a beacon of either hope or as a light to walk towards.
You know, the amazing thing that Elihore, you know, I am holding in my brain. I did Shakespeare.
Yes, sir.
Professionally, I did Julius Caesar, Othello, and Titus Andronicus.
I was going to say, and the lesser known Titus Andronicus.
the lesser known.
Yes, sir.
You know. But when I was at school, I did a Macbeth.
Sure.
You know, I think in my matric.
That was our set work for matric.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the weirdest thing is that the famous Macbeth speech, if it were done, went as done, to a world were done quickly.
Sure.
If this assassination could tremble up the consequence and catch with this a sea success, that this blow might be the be-all and the end-all here, but here upon this bank and shoal of time, we jump in the life to come. That one is still in my head. But if you ask me of anything that I did professionally, you know, even the bargaining friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears, I can't go beyond that.
Absolutely.
You know, but it's amazing how I think the brain, when you are young, actually just holds on to certain things.
It retains. Including the things it doesn't need.
You know?
There are days I'm sitting in a queue at the post office and I'm wondering, when am I going to ever label thorax again?
Yeah.
But when I see an insect,
yeah,
sometimes say, yeah, when I'm on a thorax.
It's interesting thing.
It's been a journey for you, though.
Yeah.
And like I was saying, you know, we're talking about, you know, do you ever look in the mirror and you actually tap yourself on your shoulder? Because the African humility sometimes is to our own detriment. It doesn't allow us to beat our own chest. It doesn't allow us to remember who the hell we are.
No, absolutely.
Dude, everything is just... You know what I mean? And there's nothing wrong with that. But at some stage, you need to also be able to stand up and say, I am who I am, and I'm a powerful African man.
You know? I mean, but one thing that I used to like doing...
Yeah.
When I'm going for an audition.
Sure.
You know, I mean, when I was not yet Archie Muroka or whatever.
When you still did auditions. Now they just call you.
You know, and one thing that I used to do was, yeah. I got like Kralor Neg, I mean, kettle call.
Sure.
You know, maybe you see a line.
There's literally hundreds of you sometimes.
Yes. Yeah. You know, sitting in the line. And as I'm seated, they're waiting for my turn.
That one is mine. I don't know why you're wasting time.
That, you know, but you actually have got to have that kind of a thing, because mm-hmm. unless you know, you have a conversation with yourself.
Sure.
You know, you go in there, you know,
exactly.
And no, you should actually speak to yourself. I'm the shizness here.
Exactly. Is there any role you never got, but when you looked back at the product, you understood why maybe you didn't get it?
Actually, I haven't sat that down and thought about that.
Mm.
I haven't thought about that. You know, maybe...
Or is it because you haven't been rejected in a very long time?
I mean, I've had some rejection, but even when I mean... You know, when I would see, you know, somebody has got the role.
Yes, yes.
It never.
You move on.
I just move on, basically. It's not meant for me.
You don't erect a tombstone.
You know what I mean?
On the first of every year, you visit the tombstone.
Yeah. No, I haven't. I haven't really thought about that.
So we are literally recording down the road from the Market Theatre.
Yeah.
Tell us about your relationship with the Market Theatre.
You know, my relationship with the Market actually started, when was it, 79. And that was my first, you know, coming to the Market. And I'd come here to do a showcase.
Yes, sir.
You know, they used to call them tryouts
yeah.
at that time. I had written a play called... My Home, which was basically, I mean, it was a rip-off of The Island. I mean, it was about, what, 19 years old?
Sure, sure.
I think 70, 78.
No, it wasn't a rip-off. It was inspired.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, no, but you know, that's the best way of putting it.
Yes, sir.
It was inspired by The Island, and there was also another play called Survival.
Mm.
Which dealt with prison life.
Sure.
And I guess, you know, like, see, yeah, sometimes when, you know, you get inspired by things that you see in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Survival was, I mean, I'd never seen The Island. The Island, I just read the script. Survival, I'd seen it.
Mm.
And I saw Survival, I think, 1977.
Mm.
And prior to that, I've been watching Gibson Kenter's plays, you know, How Long, Poor Mama and the Load, Taxi Man and the School Girl, you know, and those were musicals.
Sure.
You know, Gibson produced musicals.
Mm.
And for the first time, I saw a play with only 5 actors on stage.
Yeah.
And there was no band.
Mm.
But the world that unfolded before my eyes
yes.
was like, wow. I remember I couldn't sleep. I got home and I was like, sure, 5 people only on stage.
Yeah.
You know, and that was what they called it at that time, experimental theater.
Oh, yes.
You know, so it was my play was inspired by that. And what I did was I took my play to and performed at what they called the Pretoria Theater Organization. They used to run a festival in Pretoria.
Sure.
And I went and the guy that I was doing the play with initially didn't have the courage that it will work. And he ditched me on the eve of the festival.
Yeah.
So what I did was like, I'm not going to let that festival pass me.
Mm.
That night I rehearsed the play in my head. You know, when you are young, you're daring. I rehearsed the play in my head, just put it together in my head.
Sure.
And the following day, I went and presented it as a one-hander.
Ah.
You know, and it was voted the best play. And those guys, when I told them that initially it was a two-hander, and then that's, you know, they called my co-actor, and he now realized, okay, so it works. And we came to the Market to do a tryout.
So what was the lesson then, in terms of your experience copytoring? In terms of, you know, you've been dumped last minute, but
yeah.
You've hung on, though.
No, I think the lesson is, you know, don't let your dream hang on the hope or on other people.
Sure.
You are the carrier of your dream.
Mm.
And I think from then on, you know, I basically just, you know, and I work alone. I work best when I work alone.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And made sure that when I'm alone, I actually have like serious positive talk to myself.
Sure.
Not that I don't hit, you know, any lows and downs. You know, I do hit them.
Sure.
But, you know, one thing that I had learned was to always find a way. You know, as you say, maybe I look at myself in the mirror and say, but, you know.
Remind yourself.
Remind yourself that, hey, you matter.
Kisillo.
Kisillo. You know.
Kisillo.
Wapontolishili.
Kisillo, but I'm not about tears.
Yeah. I used to like saying kisillo, wapontolishili.
Exactly.
You know, but yeah.
So you guys then come and showcase at the market.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens?
No, in fact, it never really made it.
Yes.
You know, because I think they had seen the best.
Yes, yes.
They've seen the island. They've seen, what is it, Survival.
Sure.
You know, so mine was actually just, you know, like inspired by. And then my next meeting with the market then came in 1985. Mm. Mbongeni Ngema and the late Mbongeni, and may his soul rest in peace, you know, had done, Woza Albert.
Yes.
But at that time, I think they started doing Woza Albert, I think, around about '81. And they've been touring the world. But now also, they, you know, like they had things that they wanted to do.
Sure.
You know, Mbongeni, I think the next play that he did was to write Asina Mali. And the place he went and wrote Bopa. But the play was still in demand.
Sure.
So there were auditions. For, you know, the embarking a cast for Woza Albert to take over from Mbongeni and Pace.
Oh, yes.
You know, and that time I'm working as a clerk at some pharmaceutical firm in Crisis.
No, man, isn't this where you quit over a weekend?
No, because, well, you know, because what happened was, Dixon, who was the stage manager of Woza Albert, actually calls me, and he came, you know, because we didn't have phones those days. He came to where I live in Jablan and say, hey, man, there's auditions for Woza Albert, you know, come, you know, and... You know, we're starting at about 2 o'clock. I went there, auditioned, and they said they were interested in me. And
but you must start on Monday.
Yeah, and they said, well, you know, but you said you are working. And I said, when do you start rehearsal? But Monday.
Yes.
Said, well, on Monday I'm here. And Monday, instead of going to work, I went to rehearsal. It was after a week that on my way to rehearsal,
sure.
I dropped a resignation letter.
Just close the door.
Exactly. And I remember when I arrived, my supervisor was Mr. Piper. I still remember. Mr. Piper, as I walked in, he said, Selo, your leave days are over, you know. And then your sick leave days are over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to take some days from your leave. I said, hey, Mr. Piper, you can have them all.
Yes.
Here's my resignation.
So who is Bra Kenny Majozi?
Yeah.
And how did he impact your life?
Kenny Majozi is my Rangwan.
Sure.
All because of his mother and my biological father's mother.
Okay.
Well, my biological father's mother, yes.
Okay.
It's called
Snalotsava. Yeah.
Their sisters.
Sure.
So Rangwani in that sense. And he was the one who basically, I mean, Kenny Majozi, he performed in Sikalo, you know, the Gibson Gender play, and he played the lead role. And he did some other, you know, movies, you know, like movies like Shout at the Devil, there was Gold, Udeli, where he makes an appearance, you know, the movie, not the television series. At the age of 15, you know, after seeing How Long, I was so inspired. I mean, I kept on mimicking what I saw in the play.
Sure.
And the bug for acting actually started biting me then.
Mm.
You know, I had cousins who were doing an amateur play.
Sure.
And because I was such a show off, you know, and they were older, you know, they were older teenagers. I mean, they were 18, 19, I was 15.
Sure.
And I would go in front. I say, do you remember, hey, when Africa did this, And, you know, I would be, you know, showing off and mimicking what they did.
Sure.
What Africa did. And Africa was played by Mxolisi Fassi.
Okay.
Who was, I mean, it's Brenda Fassi's brother.
Yes.
You know. And I had I used to have a missing tooth. Now, you know, we've got crowns. And Mxolisi also had a missing tooth.
The gap.
Yeah, gap. Ah, was, you know, they're role model, yeah. You know. And then one day these guys, they said, hey, Maria's Madeleine Tona Lena, man, any talent in up Caesar, I mean, and then they, you know, got me involved in the play that they were doing. And it was after that that, you know, having, you know, gotten whatever is happening on the thing, I went to my Baba Mngane and said, hey, Baba Mngane, man, I want to be an actor. And my very first acting lesson, I got it from him.
Yes, sir.
You know. And what he did, you know, I mean, first he described what drama is.
Sure.
He said drama is a human condition in dialogue and action on stage.
Yes.
And then what he did, he broke down the word actor.
Yes, sir.
He said A stands for action, C stands for creativity, T stands for technique, O stands for observation, R stands for reaction. All these five things you use as an actor.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Why do we need to never forget the name Kenny Majose?
One thing that is happening, I think, in South Africa is that, you know, it's almost like we are forgetting our history.
Mm.
And, I mean, for me, it's like I have predecessors.
Sure.
You know, I mean, before me, there were other people who, you know, who were actors. Sure. And my immediate, you know, like predecessors, I would say, Kibo Darlington Michaels. That is a generation just
before. Kibo George.
Yeah?
Bro George.
Bro George, exactly.
Yes, sir.
You know.
Brilliant
actor. And, you know, there are others. I mean, the McIntosh Khwaele, Bitu Melody, Jwe, many others. And then above them, then Kibo Kenny Majose.
Ah, yes.
You know what I mean? And I think, you know, Kenny Majose basically falls, I think, in the age group. Yabo, Brajon.
Yes, sir.
Brajon Khan.
Yes, sir.
You know what I mean? And now, you know, we've got to be careful. You know, he's a sir. He's been knighted.
Oh, yeah.
He's Sir Joe.
Yep. Brajon has been flying.
I know, bro. I know. I mean, hence, you know, my other inspiration was The Island.
Yes, sir.
You know, and I hadn't even seen him perform, but only read the play.
Mm.
You know, so I think it is important that we shouldn't forget those who were before us.
Sure.
You know, because they are the ones who set the tone.
And they did it against all odds.
Against
because
all
the odds were against any black artist.
Absolutely.
Person. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, and so I think it is important. And somehow, you know, there isn't a way where we are actually cherishing those who were before us.
Yes.
And I remember, you know, like in the 80s. Mid-80s, not mid-80s, late-80s.
Sure.
I got an opportunity to do A Dry White Season, the movie. It was shot in Zimbabwe.
Sure.
And when I was in Zimbabwe, I met with Zakes Mukai. You know, I mean, Bob Rajon and Winston Jonah were also part of the cast.
Yeah, I've been a Zakes Mukai fan since I was in primary school. I think he's brilliant.
Oh, man. Oh, he's something else. And as a human being, too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when we were shooting in Zimbabwe, I used to hang around with him a lot.
Yes.
You know, and he was even.
What did you guys talk about, Libras?
Hey, all kinds of things. I mean, I used to hang out. I mean, he used to drink a screwdriver.
Yes, sir.
Screwdriver.
Isn't
that vodka and orange juice? Vodka and orange juice. Yeah. I mean, he always drank that.
Yeah.
And I used to hang out with him. And I mean, he was such an amazing spirit.
Mm.
And the way, so what is it? Couple of things that he gave me an acting lesson, you know, just out of the blue.
Sure.
Here we are seated, we're having drinks, you know, and Nile and I have got my cherry.
Well, I'm not.
You know, I'm not. Yeah. You know, I had my Zimbabwean girlfriend there, we having a drink. I stand up, I go to the loo. When I come back, she was not there.
Right.
And I'm like, hey, where's Petunia? And Brazil says, son, bro.
Yeah.
Don't say Petunia. And say Petunia. Say, where is Petunia?
Yeah.
Where is Petun.
Yeah.
Where is Petunia? And it just with that sentence, he actually stressed it at different points. And
absolutely.
Just, so this is what you can do
yes.
with a sentence, you know.
Mm.
And I remember when we were shooting our scene, it was me, him, and Donald Sutherland.
True.
So, you know, when they start, they do their white
shorts. So three legends in one shot.
You know. No, I mean, I was not yet a legend. And I was performing with legends.
Yes, yes.
So they do the, you know, like the master,
sure.
you know, short. And then after that, they come into close-ups.
Mm.
And, you know, they start with the big guys.
Sure.
You know, they started with Donald Sutherland, mm. after Donald Sutherland, then it was Brazix.
Yeah.
And then when they are coming to me, you know, just before I take, Brazix comes and whispers in my ear. And he said, son, millions will be watching your face on that big screen. Hated boy.
Yeah.
And he laughed. I mean,
at that moment, what are you feeling? Are you feeling encouraged or are you there?
I mean, you're there, yeah. but somehow you get this. I guess maybe he was seeing or no.
Yeah.
But you know, he doesn't know. Let me, you know, let the boy settle down.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and you know, that made me say, okay, millions would be watching my face. Yeah, I better hit it.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah.
Did you find Petunia? Did you find
No, Petunia did find it. But what was interesting? What was interesting?
Yeah.
Brazix passes on. I'm doing a one-man show, and I decided to just dedicate a performance to him.
Mm.
And then amongst the people who came was the late poet laureate,
yes.
Brawili,
yes.
Khositsi,
mm.
you know, the Onkopot.
Yes.
You know, and... after the show, then I tell the story of where is Petunia, sure. you know. And Mutu Brawili comes and say, hey, there's Petunia caused problems for Zeus. I mean, here is Brazil is returning home after having a couple of drinks. And he realizes that he forgot to take his keys. So, he wants to shout to his wife to open for him. And he goes, Petunia. And he says he had to explain. Yeah. No, but Brazix was a, you know, and I remember, you know, meeting him
yeah.
was from make me realize
mm.
that, you know, that there were those who were before me.
Sure.
And I remember, like, Corona in that in the 80s,
mm.
one day I'm seated with Louis. I mean, there used to be a restaurant here called the Yard of Ale.
Oh, yes.
You know.
I remember the Yard of Ale.
You know, and they used to have this American... you know, wooden blocks that they use for rail lines.
So,
you know, they used to, I mean, they used them to camp, you know, to sort of like create a yard.
Mm.
And I'm seated with Louis there. And a thought crosses my mind to ask Louis a question. And I say, Louis,
mm.
tell me how many actors, white actors who are John Kani's contemporary do you know?
Mm.
Or contemporaries are, do you know?
So,
and Louis is that going, Mang Man, Charles Comine, so-and-so,
mm.
Joe Stewartson, and he mentioned, you know, all the names. And I say, okay, tell me black actors who are Brad John's contemporaries
mm.
but are working
sure.
in the theater.
Mm.
He couldn't start, he couldn't mention one without mentioning Brad John.
Mm. Mm.
And that was where the problem is. And it's sure. even now.
Mm.
I mean, who are Brad John's contemporaries
sure.
who are still working in the theater
exactly.
or in the space?
Mm-hmm.
None. You know, and that is
why. So what's the problem here?
I think the problem is actually even now, for me, it is like there is those who have taken, I mean, since the new dispensation,
mm-hmm.
I don't think the new dispensation realized the importance
mm-hmm.
of maintaining, you know, intergenerational conversations
yes,
and
yes.
keeping a certain generation alive or, you know, working in the space.
How about there's a ministry for that?
There's a ministry for that, but, A, you know, it is not doing the thing. And once you realize, one thing that you would also realize, it is that During the apartheid years, there used to be what they call Performing Art Council.
Yes.
And those Performing Art Council catered for the nurturing and the keeping alive of the theatrical space.
Absolutely.
Those Performing Art Councils were catering for all the performing arts disciplines, dance, music, and acting.
Mm.
You know, there was a drama company, there was an opera company, and, musicals as well, and then there was also dance. And we come into the new dispensation, all those things get thrown out of the window.
But why do you think the arts were treated as shoddily as you're saying, when it was the arts that got the message out there?
Hey, I know.
It was, the reason there was a cultural boycott of this country during the era of the Nats.
Yeah.
Because you fully understood the role culture plays.
Yeah. Yeah.
So why would you, now that you have freedom, turn your back on the very arts and culture that kept people motivated, that got messages out there in the absence of a flyer?
You know, I don't know, man. You know, I don't know whether it is because black people, basically, we always look at culture as something that is
a hobby.
It's a hobby. You know what I mean? Singing and dancing is something that we do, without effort and with them. And I mean, that actually brings me to the time when, as I was starting to be an actor, my friend's father asked me a question. He said, "Where am I, man? How are you sure?
I'm happy he did that. Where does he work?"
So it was never looked on as work, but those who were in exile, I'm sure they saw
exactly
that this thing is work. And I think for me, the dismantling also of the Performing Arts Council,
institutions that were working,
and that also, when you look at it again, I mean, you look at what the Afrikaners had done.
You know, Brasillo, if we could be as jealous of our languages, of who we are, as the Afrikaners are, we would be a totally different society.
And that is why they are.
And that is why they continue to thrive the way that they do.
And
because they understand the importance of their language.
Exactly.
You know, where they come from.
And, also,
and preserving everything.
You know, look at, the Afrikaner Broederbond.
Yeah.
The Afrikaner Broederbond was actually formed in order almost to preserve Afrikaner culture and Afrikaner language.
Exactly.
It was formed in 1918, and within 30 years, they worked themselves up.
Yes.
To political power.
Yes.
Because in 1948, just 30 years later,
sure,
they took over as the Nats Party, And I say, had there, if 1976 never happened, in that 30 years, they would have actually completed their mission.
Absolutely.
Because you look at what they did, as much as it was bad, the separation, the Areas Act,
sure,
Separate Amenities Act and all that. But they had the country in a certain way where it was working. And then comes 76. And that was almost, I think, the final masterstroke that they would have done, in South Africa, by actually now enforcing that Afrikaans becomes the medium of instruction.
Sure.
So which means we are going to be an Afrikaner, Afrikaans-speaking country.
Sure.
And again, also, at that time, I remember when they were, 1976, the beginning of the year. Textbooks of all the whatever subjects,
sure,
be it biology, geography, Viskende, those textbooks were delivered at the beginning of the year.
True.
We had them, we were reading from them.
And
had 76 never happened, I tell you, man.
Yeah.
They would have completed their mission.
It would be a different story. As a parent who, as a Motswana parent, it saddens me that the majority of schools don't have Setswana for my kid. I mean, Lifika is 8, is in grade 3.
I know.
Though we found one school that teaches Setswana from grade 1. So we put him in that school, and luckily it's a decent school.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for your average parent, they're stuck with Afrikaans or Zulu and nothing else.
You know, and without language, Vana, here's the thing. I think in 1999, I came up with an idea. 1998, actually, I came with the idea. Came up with an idea to open up a performing arts academy.
Sure.
Where, you know, to teach actors to be multilingual.
Oh, yes.
But then, you know, got disrupted, ended up going to the UK. And doing the Lion King. When I'm in the UK, I get the opportunity to do Othello with the Royal Shakespeare Company. Now, when we were doing it, Othello, I mean, it was the 400th year anniversary of Othello.
True.
400th year of Othello, not Shakespeare. Othello. What kept the play alive for all those years?
Sure.
It means it was being performed by the actors. And for me, performing artists are the custodians of the living culture.
Yes.
And here we are.
And of language.
Exactly. You know, because now if ever you're training actors and you're training dancers, but you're not even training them in appreciation of the culture that they have,
yes,
the languages that they have, you know, then, you know, you are actually just creating, what is it, imitators.
Yeah.
Of another culture instead of their own. You can never have an English actor taught how to act without English, or a German actor taught to act, or Italian or French or whatever. But here we are.
And we should be as bold as to translate the very Shakespeare into our language.
Exactly, because
our language.
And you look at it, you find, won't that this all like, they have translated, I mean, you know, and he translated Julius Caesar into Setswana. And I think even the Comedy of Errors, he translated into Setswana. I think even Hamlet, you know. And the thing is, also, should that kind of thing be entertained, then we would even have people translate other works.
Exactly.
And another thing is that actors, you know, or performing artists, really role model as much as I hate the word, you know, that we are role models. But really role models.
True.
Can you imagine if you were trained, you would actually have an actor who is multilingual. And not multilingual because he learned it Mustrating.
Sure.
But multilingual because he went through the paces of learning even the intricacies of the different languages.
Trained.
Trained. And you know, one thing that I would say, that I would say, that some of them might not even end up being actors, you know, but they will end up, if ever I had started that thing, you would have actors who have learned, you know, all these languages.
Sure.
And then when you're looking for teacher, you'd actually have one teacher, maybe teaching 4 or 5 languages.
But yet we are here. We are.
But yeah, but here we are. 30 years later, we still, you know.
You also sign language.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Tell us about that.
My daughter. My daughter. We discovered, I think, when she was, I think, about a year and a couple of months. And, you know, we discovered that she has lost her hearing.
Doesn't have hearing.
Yeah. You know, and...
How did that feel as a parent? Because, you know, often as parents or as parents-to-be, we say, you know, 10 fingers, 10 toes, I'll be happy.
Yeah.
But we never anticipate that there might be other challenges.
I know.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, one thing that was, I think that sort of like served as a cushion, you know, for me and my daughter's mother, was that... There was one Saturday I took her out, you know, and there was a performance of a play called Children of the Lesser God. And it is a play about a deaf child.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And we saw that movie, you know, before we had our child. So somewhere, somehow, that, you know, sort of like said, hey. And in fact, when we were coming out, we actually said, do you remember, you know, when they used the line or they haven't... I don't know.
Little did we know
that, you know. And yeah, I mean, that actually sort of cushioned it.
True.
You know, and then somehow, and then you know how people say things, but yeah, mudimu
abaota. You see, there's also that with our communities, though.
You know.
There's often that, and And how do you deal with it at an emotional level as a man?
And you know what I did? What I remember my thinking was, you know, if ever Mujimu alona walota, now my God actually brings things that informs me and that teaches me how to deal with life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. How does raising a child with whatever challenges affect the relationship?
You know, actually, I think interestingly enough, I think my relationship with my daughter's mother was not as a result of that. You know, what messed it up or challenged it was not our daughter. It was just issues, male, but men and women issues, you know, that we struggled with. And also, I think, you know, one thing that I would say is that it was actually at that time, you know, where in my development as a young man, you know, I actually realized my propensity to be violent to my girlfriend.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And lucky for me was that I have a very strong conscience, you know. And if there is God, you know, Tato, if there is God, my brother, he lives in your conscience. You know, and I remember, you know, in my aloneness, you know, I would end up thinking, but why am I doing this? You know, and one time I even, you know, when I met with her, I said, you know what, this doesn't make sense to me. On one hand, I say I love you, and on one the other, I can harm you. It doesn't make sense to me. And I started introspecting at that time. And in my introspection, it's where I discovered that I was insecure.
Sure.
Jealous. Well, jealousy and insecurity goes hand in hand. And the other one was realizing that I have a little stammer. You know, I stutter a little bit. You know, and you can imagine when you've got a stammer or you're stuttering and you get agitated, you actually fail.
I had a cousin like that. I had a cousin with a stutter. And, and if the words failed, then the fists would come out.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and that's what would happen.
Sure.
And once I discovered that, I mean, when we would be in a, you know, in an altercation, and I would go.
It's short term.
Yeah. I started using or doing what later I would learn as timeout.
Sure.
In 1984. And for me, that was how my journey actually started.
Sure.
You know, in dealing with the whole thing of masculinity. It started in 1984. And it was only in 1998 that I came across an organization in Alexander that dealt, you know, with domestic violence, and they had a men's program. In fact, if anything, they were pioneers of having men as partners in dealing with domestic violence.
Sure.
And there were these four guys who wanted to do a play. And when I learned that, I said, I've been wanting to, you know, to meet with guys in the, you know, with a similar thinking. You know, and I met up with these guys, and you know, like, Ibra Solomon, you know, we want to do a play to show that we have changed. And I said, but changed from what? And then we started interrogating that.
Sure.
That play dealt with toxic masculinity, you know, what is now termed toxic masculinity, in 1998. And we named the play Kome.
Sure.
Which I was using a metaphor of Foyakome.
Burnt to the mountain.
Exactly.
Or for initiation.
You know, for initiation. When you go for that, it has to deal with the endurance of physical pain.
Sure.
So in the play, we're dealing with how to endure psychological and mental pain.
Sure. So where are you at now in terms of that journey you've been there?
Oh, I'm still at it. I am still on it. You know what I mean? I mean, now I'm actually going as, you know, an activist in that regard.
Sure.
You know, recently I did a play, but it was a woman, women only cast, you know, also dealing with, you know, gender-based violence. But it is something, actually now, I mean, I know I've been talking, I need to write a book called Lessons for My Sons.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Because bonna bo a holelwa.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I don't know how to say that in English. You know,
you grow into
your
manhood.
Yes, you know, you don't actually become a man because of age.
Sure.
You grow into it, yes. And somehow you have to be nurtured into it. Mm. And one of the things that I think as black people we don't realize that we haven't or suffered is what colonialism did to our social structure.
Sure.
Colonialism, with the discovery of diamonds and gold, dismantled the African family and did havoc on masculinity in this country. You know, the thing that men would actually have to leave their homesteads, you know, and with colonialism, men, as South African black people, were forced to pay tax with money, no longer with cows. And that is what how they would actually force black men to go to work in the mines, you know. And we haven't recovered from that, you know. And but yeah, it is something that I'm still very passionate about. And men, we actually have got to really sit down and, you know, discuss these issues.
So,
you know, and I think also even in dealing with it, we still need to actually go even further to actually have conversations between men and women, you know, because it takes two to tango.
We have to find each other.
We have to find each other, you know, and, you know, every time when, you know, and for black people, hey man, we really have got to sit down, you know, and break this whole thing down and just know how can we get back our humanity first. And, you know, one thing that was beautiful with the play, you know, at the end of the play, one of the characters says, you know, today we have discovered that we are human beings first and then man after.
True.
You know what I mean? Because most of the time when you are male, you say, no, you know, as a man or one of the, I come out, I hold a man. You know what I mean? And one thing that I hear, if you listen to the conversation from, you know, the other gender,
sure.
You know, as women, this, as women, and that in itself for me is problematic because now you are actually, what is it, overlooking your humanity. You know, it is your womanhood first and then your humanity. And men, we're operating with that. Manhood and then below was humanity. And whereas it's humanity. Buto.
If I don't see you as a human being first,
exactly,
then there's a problem.
There's a problem
because I go born here.
But how about not gen?
Born, yeah.
But how about not gen? And one thing that is beautiful also, even in our language,
sure,
we don't have the he and the she language.
Exactly,
it's u or mu. You know.
Absolutely. So, you went to Zim. Tell us about your Zim trip.
My Zim trip was very interesting.
Yeah. Like in a nutshell though, because
my Zim trip was interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, when these guys proposed it, you know, I jumped at the thing because also my wife, you know, has linkages. I mean,
yeah, your wife has Zim and Zambia.
Zim and Zambia too.
Yes.
You look quite a lag. So, where are they? But yeah, you know, I think, and for me, it was, you know, going there also, you know, for a reconnection, you know, but I guess it went at a difficult.
Were you aware you were going to end up at State House?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Why didn't you jump out of the car at the gate? Why didn't you jump out of the car at the gate?
When you're there already. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think at the end of the day, you know, for me, it was also interesting on a personal level.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, you know, you hear things, you know, but sometimes it also helps to better gang.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And one thing that was very interesting for me, you know, I mean, I remember the first time it was in 1988 when I went to Zim. And we're having a drink with some guy at a bar, you know. And in our conversation, this guy says to me, you South Africans, how can you get your freedom? You all drive cars. You know what I mean?
You don't know struggle.
You don't know struggle. And you know, and at that time, I mean, when you're in Zimbabwe, I mean, they used to have like rickshaw taxis.
Yes.
They were using Renaults. Gear thing, nailing.
Dashboard-y. The champion,
you know,
gear.
Yeah, yes. You know. And going there now, was realizing how there's almost an improvement, some kind of an improvement, despite the challenges that they are heavy. You know what I mean? And also then to, you know, I mean, I've been in South Africa. I had never been to a farm owned by a black person. And to go to a farm that you know, Hore, you know, this farm is owned by a black person. And one thing, as much as we would, we don't want to appreciate it, Zimbabweans have done something that I doubt if there's any other African country that has claimed its land the way Zimbabwe did. You know, well, how, you know, one doesn't condone how it was done, but they own the land. It's theirs, you know, and to own land, and it is something, somehow maybe our leaders are the ones who are failing us by failing to mobilize us in such a way that we realize that we have to rebuild. I went to Japan, you know, and in Japan, Bruro, I went there 2004. We were performing Othello there.
Sure.
And when we were there, they took us to Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and all that. You know, when you are there, they actually left, you know, places where the atomic bomb hit as remembrances. But around it, they have rebuilt their country.
Sure.
You know, and how did this nation allow itself, you know, get to rebuilding themselves the way they did?
Right.
And whereas we Africans are failing to do so.
Sure.
You know, I mean, for me now, it's like when you look at, you know, the freeways and the whatever, you know, you see grass growing so wildly. And I say, you know, white people came here to get rid of the jungle. We are growing it back. I mean, there's something very wrong there. You know what I mean? And you look again, Hore, in 30 years, what did the Afrikaner do? You know, and now in 30 years, what have we really strived to do? You know what I mean? And how aren't we able to rally behind each other?
It's an election year. What are your hopes for this year and for this election?
I've been hoping.
Hope is nice currency.
I know.
But it's not enough.
But it is not enough. Sometimes I console myself by saying, I don't know how you guys are going to fix this.
No, no, now I'm with you. They must, the kids behind us must be
seized. You know, you still have to go into your 60s.
I'll enjoy the...
No, matter, I think it is just sad, man, where things are at. Oh, man.
Is there hope, though, like you're saying? Because you're hoping the things will...
I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime.
Are you for real?
The change.
Are we that screwed?
Enough or not, I don't see it happening in my lifetime.
Jeez, okay.
Because I think the way even things, the way, you know, you see things are developing, there is just, I mean, there's so much splintering.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And splinters are going little you know, at the end of the day.
It's an opportunity to unite behind a common cause.
Mm-hmm.
But still rare split.
Exactly.
Split a split.
So really, man, I don't know, man. You know, Kiki, I'm just watching what's going to happen.
What else is happening in your life? Do you have shows coming up? Where can people see you in action?
Well, at the moment, I'm in Champions. It's a new series on Mzansi Magic. Mm. You know, people can, you know, check me out there.
Yes, sir.
I've been, you know, producing plays for myself. I did them. Nothing But the Truth,
oh, yes.
You know, which was written by...
Oh, that was last year.
Yeah.
Yes.
That day, John. And, you know, I'm going to be doing reprising my role, The Suit.
Sure.
You know, because this year it's the 30th anniversary since the play, the short story was turned into a play.
Yes, sir.
So I'm going to be doing that. We're going to, you know, hoping to go to Grahamstown.
We've heard The Suit in high school.
Yeah.
Or literature.
Yes. The Suit in high school. You know, about the guy who finds, you know, the wife with a lover, the lover runs away, yeah, leaving the suit behind, and he uses
original rabbit.
You know what I mean? But yeah, I played Philemon, the cuckold husbands. I mean, you know, I used to say when I was doing it that, hey, sir, you know, people experience infidelity once.
Yeah.
I am experiencing it nightly. It nightly. It. Nightly, I know, no. I'm going to catch my wife.
Did playing Philemon in any way affect any of how you related in your relationships?
What the?
Did it make you more paranoid as a lover in your real life?
No, it didn't. But one thing that I remember it did, man, hey, it affected me. The role affected and messed up my relationship in a way.
Mm.
And I think, you know, I was so eager to pull out a good performance, that, I truly immersed myself in this guy's world.
Yeah.
And it transpired that when I went home, I never touched my girlfriend.
You took him home with you?
I took this guy home with me.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And it actually, you know, messed my relationship.
Wow.
You know? And it was only when the relationship ended and then I went to Cape Town, we were doing the play again. I've got new love at that time. And
hey, fast, the most.
When you're young, it's a halakapi. You know, when you're young, things happen fast. But anyway, and then my new love comes, visits me in Cape Town. And that very first night, I'm trying to get cozy with her.
Yeah, yeah.
And realize that, I couldn't get it up.
You're still in character.
I didn't know it was, but I got a fright to see.
Have
I lost it?
Yeah.
Have I lost it?
Mm.
I slept and then I woke up the following day and I said, whoa.
It's time.
It's still happening. You know? And the following day, you know, the same thing happened.
Yeah.
You know? And I remember going, hey, man, you know? And I tell him, you know what? I think sometimes, you know, I'm tired, man.
Mm.
Let me just sleep.
Yeah.
And then wake up the following morning, hey,
it's showtime.
And then I explained, I said, hey, you know what? I think without knowing, this guy is still with me.
Yeah, I'm bringing him.
Because in the way, I think I had worked it in my head.
Sure.
That when he comes back, I mean, once she discovers the wife with the lover, he doesn't touch her anymore.
Sure.
Mm.
Jeez. Brasilo. There's still a million questions I have for you. So I'd like to ask you to come back for part two so that we can catch up some more and talk about other things.
Things, yeah.
That you're working on and talk about life. But this was just an opportunity for us to just say we see your work, we continue to see your work.
Yeah.
We love your work, we appreciate you, the inspiration that you are, the man that you are, the legend that you are, and that we're happy that you are still working.
Amen. We thank God for that.
Absolutely.
You know, we thank God.
It's not a mistake that you are in champion.
You know.
Mampudi.
No, but thank you for having me. Thank you. It was lovely having a chat with you.
Brasilo will be back for part two on Wow, What a Week. But shout out to Brasilo. Thank you for hanging out with us. We'll be coming to you from AMP Studios downtown, Jozi. We're part of the Africa Podcast Network. Pezulu Works do all of our cinematography. If we look good, it's thanks to them. If we don't look good, it's our fault. All of our imaging by Otis the Floor Fraser and our special guest, Brasilo Makeka Jumbe. Creative producer, Krivesh Mohan. Show producer, Kelezo Modisa Geng. Email us at africapodcastnetwork.com. Till next week, have a great week in spite of yourselves.